When students graduate from college, the school will often bring in a notable speaker to give what's called a commencement address. It's usually a very inspiring, motivational address where the speaker tries to help the students who are graduating commence this new chapter in their lives. Often the speech is taken up with things like the need for patience and perseverance and hard work, but often also is communicated the sense of the great expectations that the speaker or the college has for the students and the great expectations the students should have for themselves as they go out into this next chapter of their lives. And here, this book, Ecclesiastes, is really the commencement address from King Solomon. Proverbs has been called Wisdom University. His students have come through this university, and now they are ready to go out into the world and commence the next chapter of their lives. And so Solomon comes in the book of Ecclesiastes with his commencement address. And it's entitled this, What Can I Expect from Life? What can I expect as I go out into this next chapter of life? But unlike most commencement addresses, this one's not very inspiring, is it? It's not very motivational. He's telling them really as they start out on life to really have very little in the way of expectations. You can work hard, you can be patient, you can be persevering, and yet the end result will be no point, no profit, and no progress. It's really pretty depressing. He goes from great expectations in the norm of a commencement address to grim expectations. But this speech is inspired by God, and therefore it's profitable for us to learn from and to try and understand the purpose of Solomon, because his purpose is actually not to depress. In the end, his purpose is to give us great expectations, but in the right place, for the right reasons, and in the right way. So as we begin this series on the book of Ecclesiastes, just a word on the title. It's an unusual title. It's not a word we come across in our everyday lives. It's from a Greek word. The Greeks gave this book this title, Ecclesiastes, from a Greek word meaning to call together. And it's either referring to the speaker as the one who calls people together, or to his audience who are the called together ones. It's really saying this is a speaker who's calling people together to give them a message that he claims to be from God. Its author is actually not named. Solomon is not named in the book, but you'll notice the first verse says it's by the son of David, king in Jerusalem, which most people believe to be Solomon, and the evidence within the book would suggest that too. And his major theme is that life without God is meaningless, but life with God is full of meaning. So let's see how he brings that message to us as we look at verses 1 through 11. And as we try to answer this question, what can I expect from life? So Solomon's first point is, there is no point. There's no point to life. And that's really brought before us in verse 2. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Imagine you're the student here. You've completed lots of hard work. You are sitting there, you're all pumped and ready and invigorated, ready to go out into the world, And the first words you hear are vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Now, that word doesn't mean what we usually understand it to mean, self-love, conceit. It's from a Hebrew word that means a breath or vapor or air. And what Solomon is telling us here is that life is just like that. It's something light. It's something very weak. It's something very brief. It's the opposite of substantial, solid, and permanent. He's saying it's like a little puff of air that is gone as soon as it appears. It's like the smoke from the dying embers of a campfire. It's like what's left after you pop a soap bubble. It's nothing, is it? It's just brief, it's weak, it's insignificant, doesn't seem to have any purpose at all. It's smoke that appears briefly, then vanishes after a little time. And Solomon says, that's life. It's brief, and it's pointless. It's about as important as the breath you took just a couple of seconds ago. There's no point. That's how he sums up the whole of life. Breath of breaths. All is a breath. And the way he puts this in this form, vanity of vanities, that's a Hebrew way of expressing the superlative. Like, Holy of Holies is the holiest of all. Lord of Lords is the greatest Lord. So when he's saying vanity of vanities, he's saying this is the greatest vanity of all, the greatest emptiness of all. That's life. So Solomon is saying to his students and to us, learn from the professor of mistakes. That's how Solomon really describes himself in this book. He is the professor of mistakes. He's saying, look, I've tried a lot in life. I've experimented, as we'll see. He tried everything. And he's saying, learn from my mistakes. Don't ignore my mistakes and then just go and make your own. I'm coming to you, students, with all the blunders, all the missteps, all the miscalculations I made. Why make your own when you can learn from an expert? One of America's great poets, Carl Sandburg, said this: life is an onion. You peel it off one layer at a time, and sometimes you weep. And Solomon sings something similar. Expect disappointment, and you won't be disappointed. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And maybe one way we could put this into practice is to learn how to do biblical breathing exercises. You look up YouTube, breathing exercises, you'll find a gazillion videos telling us how to use our breath for meditation purposes, for health purposes. But here Solomon saying, use your breath for spiritual purposes. Use your breath to teach you about the greatest truth of all in this life. So he's saying, take a breath, breathe it out, and as you do so, think, that's my life. That's it. That's how brief it is. That's how quick it is. That's how fleeting it is. Gone. Billy Graham said, the greatest surprise in life to me is the brevity of life. He lived till his 90s. The English author, classical author Jane Austen said, life seems to be nothing but a succession of quick nothings. Quick nothings. Life has no point. As Moses said, if that's true, in Psalm 90 he said, Lord, teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Help us to feel the pointlessness so that we can find a point. That's Solomon's purpose. It's not to leave us in pointlessness, but to make us think, where can I find a point to life? And we'll get there. But in the meantime, use life's brevity to prepare for eternity. That's what Solomon wants us to do. He does emphasize very much the brevity of life, but it's with a purpose to make us think about another dimension, another realm of existence, the eternal, the foreverness of eternity. Use that puff to make you think of the permanent. You might say, well, okay, life may not be long, life may not be purposeful, life may not have a point, but at least I can make some money while I'm here, can't I? Well, Solomon goes on to tell us in verse 3, there's no profit in life. There's really no profit. Look at verse 3. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Remember, Solomon's one of the richest men in the world. As you read Ecclesiastes, as you read the historical books, Kings and Chronicles about Solomon, you find out he wasn't one of those privileged royals who just live off what previous generations earned for him. He was extremely busy, extremely industrious. He was hardworking. You can imagine a lazy person saying, huh, you know, life is just not worth working hard. There's no profit. Or maybe a poor person saying, you know, what's the point? I'm never going to make any money anyway. But this was not Solomon. He was neither lazy nor poor. He was industrious and he was rich. And yet even he said or asked this question, what does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? And it's a rhetorical question. It's a question that's asked and not explicitly answered because he wants us to see the answer is obvious without him giving it. And the obvious answer is it doesn't profit. Toil here, the word, it's not just for work, it's for hard work, back-breaking work, laborious work, painful work. And he's saying, for all the effort, for all the pain, for all the muscles that I put into my life, what did I gain? So he's got a lot of gold, but he's got no gain. He's financially rich, but spiritually poor. He sees that at the end of the day, he might have a great accumulation of profit, but then he sees death is just going to wipe it all out. He could be a multi-billionaire the second before he dies, and as soon as his breath stops and he dies, zero, nothing. For all that life, all that work, no gain, no profit. He couldn't take 1 cent or 1 gold fleck with him. And therefore, he's saying here, there's no profit to all of this. Now, I think, is this pessimistic spirit really worthy of a believer? In fact, it's really nihilistic, isn't it? It's really saying there's just life is nothing, afterwards nothing. Is that acceptable thinking from a believer that Solomon was? Well, the key to understanding this is this phrase in verse 3, under the sun. Okay? That's a key phrase, three words in Ecclesiastes. It actually appears 28 times in 12 chapters. What's Solomon telling us here? He's saying, whatever else, you've got to understand what under the sun means. And what under the sun is speaking of is it's a worldview. It's a way of viewing the world. It's a set of beliefs that arise from living under the sun. And living under the sun means living with no horizon beyond this world. It's never getting above and beyond the sun. The sun, the blue sky, the moon, the stars, the visible world is it. And this life that Solomon is speaking of here, of which he says there's no point and there's no profit, it's that kind of life. It's life lived without God. It's life lived with a purely secular viewpoint. It's life lived that focuses only on what can be seen and heard and touched and tasted and smelt. It really represents the humanist view, the man-centered view, the godless, the atheistic view. And throughout this book, Solomon speaks from this perspective. Not all through the book, as we'll see, but in large parts of it, he adopts this worldview. He steps, as it were, into these beliefs, the beliefs of the person who thinks this world is all there is, this time is all there is, what is visible is all there is. And he's saying, if you do that, this is the consequence of it. If that's your worldview, if that's your set of beliefs, if these are the values by which you live, here's what you can expect. No point and no profit. Archer, the commentator, said this: the purpose of Ecclesiastes was to convince men and women of the uselessness of any worldview which does not rise above the horizon of man himself. It pronounces the verdict of vanity of vanities upon any philosophy of life which regards the created world or human enjoyment as an end in itself. Having shown the vanity of living for worldly goals, the author clears the way for a truly adequate worldview which recognizes God himself as the highest value of all and the meaningful life as the one which is lived in his service. We'll see that in numerous points throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. At the moment, he's simply focusing on this under-the-sun view so that he really emphasizes and gets into his students' heads and hearts the true consequences of their false beliefs. This is what you can expect if you live like this, with this view of yourself and of the world. So I want to ask, is that your worldview? It might not be on Sunday morning for an hour. You might get above the sun. You might get a sense of something beyond this world for a short time. But what about the rest of the week? And this is not about what you might say you believe, but it's how you live out your belief. Is it a life lived merely under the sun? A life lived that God does not appear in. It's just living for the here and the now, for the temporary rather than the permanent and the eternal. So what does that life look like? Well, it looks like just rushing around and around and around. Work, work, work for no profit, no profit, no profit. As somebody put it, it's we're living lives of quiet desperation. What profit? What am I gaining? What do I end up with? For all the hours, all the effort, all the drive, all the resolution, all the determination, all the planning, all the to-do lists, all the scheduling, what am I gaining? What do I have at the end of it all? We pour ourselves into these lifestyles, and what do we get at the end of it? We get rising prices, out-of-control inflation, punishing interest rates, unaffordable health care, college fees that are astronomical, that we go into massive debt to pay. We see our 401ks and our IRAs plummeting, can't afford to buy a house, debt is sky high. It's such a contemporary book, isn't it? It could have been written today, about today. Has it been written about you? Is this your life under the sun? But of course, there is another life. There's a life above the sun. It's not said explicitly here, but it's implied, isn't it? If there's a life under the sun and these are the consequences, what does life above the sun look like? Well, it's another dimension altogether. It's a world that you cannot see with your eyes. You cannot touch with your hands. It's a world that's accessible only through faith. And it's especially and specifically faith in the Son of God. And therefore we get above the Son through the Son. Above the Son, S-U-N. Through the Son, S-O-N. And as we go through the sun and we get above the sun, we see everything differently. We don't see vanity of vanities. We see point. We don't see no gain. We see gaining everything. We see life as God sees it. We have a completely different view of the world and our purpose in it and our reason for being here. Life above the sun, through faith in Jesus Christ, it lifts us into this new dimension. We leave the terrestrial behind and we enter the celestial. We leave this earth and we see the heavenly. We leave what's so temporary and brief and we see what is permanent and solid and forever. Solomon here is inviting us to another world view altogether. It's really as Jesus says, lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust corrupt, where thieves do not break through and steal. Invest in the heavenly kingdom and you'll have an imperishable inheritance. We could sum it up like this: living above the sun improves life under the sun. It's not that we stay there and leave here, no, but by living up there, it improves life down here. Living above the sun improves life under the sun. And it gives us life through the Son of God. Well, you might say, I'm not really about making lots of money, but I'd love to just help the world develop, help the world make progress. What does Solomon say about that? He says this: there is no progress. Look at verse 4. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. So you look at humanity, and it's just a cycle. You look at the earth, it's more permanent, it outlasts people, but even the earth has just these cyclical processes, these repetitive, monotonous processes. If you look at verses 5 to 7, it talks about how the rivers run into the sea, but the sea is never full because the water evaporates and it comes and just goes through the rivers again. And it looks at a number of natural cycles here. The sun rises, sets, rises, sets. The wind blows north, the wind blows south, the wind blows north, the wind blows south. He's saying there's no progress. Somebody called it a cosmic merry-go-round. Just round and round and round. Whether you look at people, whether you look at processes, the human world or the natural world, it's just repetitive, monotonous, mundane, round and round and round. How things have been, they will always be. Look at verse 9. What has been is what will be. What has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it's said? See, this is new. The world's always saying that, isn't it? Oh, we've got the next new thing. We found cryptocurrency. Or we've got artificial intelligence now. We're going to put people on Mars. This is new. This is new. And Solomon says here, is there a thing of which it said, see, this is new? It's been already in the ages before us. Now, he's not saying there used to be cryptocurrency and artificial intelligence and going to Mars and all that. But he's saying, really, when you get to the base of it all and the reason why people seek these things, there's nothing new under the sun. You think, for example, of medical technology that's extended so much life. It's also been used, what? To kill millions of lives through abortion. Oh, we've got the internet. It's really improved communication. We can be in contact with anyone, anywhere, anytime. And it's also been the means of destroying millions of lives with pornography. You think of air travel, and we can fly anywhere in the world. We've never been able to access so many people and places, and we don't know our neighbors. We can publish. We can click a few buttons, and we can write for the whole world to read. There's never been so many words, never so much information, and never so little reading. Do you see what he means? There's no improvement. We're not moving forward. We're not advancing civilization. We're just going round and round and round. Injustice, crooked politicians, unaffordable lifestyles, incompetent leaders. Everything we read of in the media, what is, has been, and always will be. There's no progress. It's the same old, same old. So what's Solomon inviting us to think about here? Well, he hears these young people, hears us saying, well, I'm different, and I'm going to make a difference. I know that's true of most people, but it's not true of me. I'm going to be the one. I'm going to be the one that pioneers, that breaks through, that develops, that really helps this world be different. And Solomon is saying, you won't make a difference because you're not different. You won't make a difference because you're not different. The world will be the same on the day of your arrival as on the day of your departure. 11, there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. We'll just be forgotten. We might live on in some people's memories for a few years, but after two or three generations, who was that again? You go to the graveyard and you see all these people that were so well known in Biden Center, just like we are today, and you look at the stones and you think, no idea who they are. We are not different, and we won't make a difference, but Jesus is different, and he makes a difference. He is the one who comes and says, behold, I make all things new. He creates a new people with new values, with new power, with new energy, with new lives, with new songs, going to a new heavens and a new earth. He says, come to me and I will make progress through you. A progress In this world, as you advance in sanctification, as you advance in usefulness, as you spread the kingdom that makes a difference, not just to people's lives here, but to people's lives forever. And then ultimately, whatever little mini steps of progress we've made here, when we get to eternity, progress. You talk about advancement and development and flourishing and thriving. That's where Solomon's pointing us to here. When we get to life above the sun, we live forever above the sun. So, if you want to make a difference, you must be made different. And Jesus can make you new. When Jesus changes you, then you become a change maker. So we asked this question, didn't we? What can I expect from life? As I look out, what's the future going to look like? However young or old we are. We saw Solomon say there's no point, there's no profit, there's no progress. And we hear Jesus coming in and saying, yeah, but with me there's point, there's profit, and there's progress. And therefore, live life above the sun for great expectations. Soar by faith to this other world, this other dimension. Through faith. And that changes our grimmest of expectations to our greatest of expectations. So let's use life under the sun with all its grimness and its pain and its defeat and disappointment to get to life above the sun. That's what Solomon's doing. He's saying, young people and old people, anyone who's listening, look at this world, look at this life, look at it from a godless perspective, feel the pain of it. Feel the sorrow of it. Feel the depression. But don't stop there. Use that experience to get you to seek a kingdom that lasts forever and a life that lasts forever. Live life above the sun for great expectations. We can only get great expectations through our great Savior. Jesus Christ. That's the message of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity to purpose, point, and progress through Jesus. Please seek him. Please find him. Please pursue him. Please believe in him. If you already do, do it more. Soar higher. Get above the sun more often. And you will begin to see point, profit, and progress. Let's pray. Most High God, eternal in the heavens, give us your view of the world so that we can live with point, profit, and progress, both in our short time here and forever with you. Amen.